Hey guys, today's episode is called To Be Told. It's about sharing our stories, the good, the bad, and the kind of stuff that makes us honestly want to retreat to the closet. You were made for this time with a story so grand and so unique that it could only have been written by the Creator himself. So with that, here we go. So today's episode, I was telling you, is called To Be Told, and it's about sharing our stories. I'm doing this episode from home today, which is really interesting because you're probably going to hear stuff. I've had the dog barking at the UPS driver. I've heard garbage trucks going by the back of the house. I've heard trains in the distance. And there's a racetrack not too far where there must be sprint cars practicing. So if you hear any of that stuff coming through today, I apologize. But that's life. And so that's kind of what we're talking about. So this is episode number 39. And I think today is April the 9th. I believe that's what it is. Yesterday was when the eclipse happened. You know, the big day we've all been waiting for. So I'm here in central Indiana, and the eclipse happened. I think it started like about 1:51, and it peaked here around 3:07. And Stacy and Emma and I, we went outside as soon as we could see the skies were beginning to change. And they went from like this brilliant blue to like this really hazy brown. It was crazy looking. I was taking pictures with my phone so I could kind of see the sequence as the sky began to change. And we watched, you know, as the street lights began to come on and the birds, it was really weird. They started getting quiet, like they were preparing to go down for the night. You know, what was really strange was the winds picked up as we were sitting there in the driveway by like probably 10 to 12 miles an hour. And the temperature dropped from wherever it was. I think it was like 74, went down to like 60 in just a short amount of time. It was crazy. And the really dark part came on pretty quick. And then shortly after that, it got light a lot faster than it got dark. That was so strange. But we'd experienced something, you know, and I think many of you did, that only comes around maybe once or twice in a lifetime. But the buildup to this event, it's been crazy with people talking about it, you know, all over the world. We've been hearing about it on the radio and on television. And there were literally millions of people driving and flying in from all over the country and around the world so they could experience this today in the path of where this eclipse was going to be going. So that event will now be included in part of my life story, your life story, you know, just as the highs of the first man to walk on the moon was for me, and maybe as 9-1-1 was for those of you that have memories as far back as 2001. And the question that we've heard so many times is, you know, where were you when? And I remember where I was when man landed on the moon. I was at my best friend's house back in Rocky Grove, Pennsylvania, and when the jets crashed into the World Trade Centers, I was getting ready to go do a vocal session at Gaither Studios. We were going to be recording all day there. And it was so surreal when I arrived. Usually people are getting their coffee and donuts and we're all joking and laughing. And you could have heard a pin drop. You could just hear a little bit of weeping. And as I walked in, the people that had gotten there first, they were all gathered around in a circle and they were praying for our country and for the families that were affected. And no one knew what this meant yet. I walked, you know, after praying with them, I walked to this break room, and the only two people in that room was myself and Bill Gaither. And we were watching the news on television, and he looked at me and he said, 9-1-1. No one on the news had used that term yet. It was a moment like caught in time that's been seared into my memories. I will never forget that. So in today's podcast, I want to start off by saying, we have a maker. Like we saw this eclipse, the sun and the moon and the stars and everything that we witnessed in the heavens yesterday. He's made all those things, but more importantly, he made you. And you are a part of his story, and you have a purpose. So as I experienced the sunlight being drastically dimmed by the moon passing in front of it, I thought about how the light in our life stories can be overshadowed by dark times. But here's the amazing thing. The sun is going to keep rising until we go to be with Jesus, even in our darkest night. So in this episode, I want to encourage you. I want to remind you of who you really are and that you have a story that's being written, but you have to engage in it if you want to see the grandeur of it all. You know, just like we got the glasses, some of us, to be able to view that eclipse through a safe lens, if we don't start seeing our story through the God lens, all as a part of his grander story, we're going to miss it. And it's going to be wasted because our stories were meant to be told. There's a song I used to sing when I led worship for a number of years, and it was called He Knows My Name. And it says, I have a maker and he formed my heart. Before even time began, my life was in his hands. And then it says, for he knows my name. He knows my every thought. He sees each tear that falls and he hears me when I call. I have always loved that song. Sometimes down in my music room, I'll just kind of dim the lights when no one's around and I'll sit down and just in the darkness and in the silence, begin to just play that chorus. For he knows my name. He knows my every thought. He sees each tear that falls, and he hears me when I call. Sometimes we just need to know that the one who that made us really hears us, knows us, loves us, and wants the best for us. Because life really can close in on us. We have our highs and our lows. And in those highs, you know, we kind of feel like, well, maybe now God is really, you know, blessing me for something. Or when the lows go, what happened? Where did he go? But the truth is, it's kind of like a tapestry. And you have all the dark threads and the light threads, and they're all put together to create this beautiful story. Because if we didn't have the dark threads, we would never get to know God the way that he wants us to know him, as an intimate, loving, caring father. So let's, with that, we'll just kind of move into this. So I made a post on social media about 48 hours ago, and it said this: a life well lived can be measured by the amount of stories you can tell and by the lives you've touched. So today I want to share some stories with you of my highs and lows to start off with, you know, the ups and downs in my life that uniquely created my story, you know, why I'm doing this podcast, the one I was meant to tell before even the foundations of the earth were created, like that chorus talked about. So when I wrote this down, you know, it's weird because when you begin to write your own story down, it's funny because it's your story, and so you try not to miss anything. And as you go through it, like with my story, because I've had so many crazy things happen because of, you know, the places I've gone and things I've been able to do, sometimes it seems like a fabrication, but I promise you that this is all a part of my story, and the people that were there shared it with me. Only God could have created this. And I also want to encourage you to take the time sometime after you listen to this podcast, go somewhere, you know, sit down, write out your story, and then see if you begin to notice a pattern or a plan of what God has been doing, you know, in your life since the day that you were born. He made your heart, he knows your thoughts, and he knows your name. So here's my story, sometimes unbelievable as it seems, but not when God is the author. I've been incredibly blessed in my life. You know, I've been able to travel all over the world, and you've heard it through these podcasts, you know, over 30 countries and 49 of the 50 states. Yeah, Hawaii is still one I haven't been to yet. But in my over 40 years as an adult, you know, I've been able to hunt the plains of Africa. I've hunted Alaska. I've hunted many of the lower 48 states. I've fished in the Atlantic, the Pacific, you know, the Great Lakes, the Bering Sea, Canada. And I've landed a lot of fish, a number of large fish, including, you know, like grouper or muskies, you know, northern pike, you know, ling cod, which are crazy big teeth on those things, almost like shark teeth, and sharks as well, and even giant halibut. You know, some of those halibut would get so big that we had to shoot them with a 410 with slugs just to bring them in the boat. I've hand-caught salmon in the Russian River. I even had an opportunity to work on a commercial salmon boat when I was in college up in Bristol Bay, Alaska. I've encountered a number of animal charges from both black bears and grizzlies, even a red stag, a 400-pound Russian boar, which was really crazy. As that thing was coming at me, I came to full draw, not knowing what to do. I didn't have a handgun with me, and he stopped 5 yards away from me, and my heart was just going through my chest. And for whatever reason, he turned and went the other way. I think it was on that same hunting trip. We were hunting in an area where there were bison, and didn't even realize there were any close to us, and walked up on a 2,000-pound bison. And close enough to where I ticked him off, and he's pawing the ground, and he starts charging away to take off, you know, laughing, but it was a nervous laughter. You know, I've had to get behind a tree with an ill-tempered rhino over in South Africa. I've had to jump on the floor of a truck that I was in with another buddy when a Cape Buffalo that had a bad attitude was closing in on us. And that Cape Buffalo had hit a vehicle the week before, doing like $20,000 in damage. I've held a live black mamba. I've fallen out of a tree stand twice. I've had a tree stand that was on my back shot by a hunter as I walked down a trail, thinking that whatever, there had been a rabbit and he fired. And I think I shared that in one of my episodes maybe about 6 weeks ago. I filmed huge brown bears catching salmon at 8 yards. Hiked breathtaking mountains. I've been followed by a mountain lion, which was weird. When I went out that morning, there were no tracks and it rained, and I was only at about an hour. And when I came back, those tracks were following my tracks. Pretty spooky. Search for a missing person in the dark in one of Alaska's craziest areas and on one of their most popular bear rivers. Had an owl try to take my face off in South Africa when I spooked it in a ranger tower. When I opened the door up, he came right at me and was hissing in my face. Pretty crazy. I've had spotted hyenas come to my campfire at night. You know, that was episode one, Eyes in the Dark. I talked about that. And I've laid under the stars, you know, in the southern hemisphere, listening to lion cries roar all night long. I've dug for clams. I've camped along Cook Inlet in a tent, which is up in Alaska. I've led Alaskan mission trips, which I absolutely have loved. Hiked several glaciers, helped clear out runways for Alaskan bush pilots. I've been stranded 40 miles off mainland Alaska for almost a week when we threw a bearing in the motor and had a storm come in and had to get into a little place called Three Hole Bay. I was stuck in with a friend in the Iliamna Mountain Range on a caribou and bear hunt. And we had to wait for our pilot to come get us, and it took days because we were socked in because of bad weather, which was pretty spooky, especially when you see grizzlies, you know, trailing some of these caribou herds. I've had bears sniff my two-man tent at night. That's pretty crazy. I've spent the night in a sleeping bag 100 yards from where a photographer would be mauled to death just 2 days later. He got too close. She had cubs, and she wasn't having any of it. Pretty scary. I've had boats sink beside me when I was working on that commercial fishing boat up in Alaska. It sank right beside me in the open ocean. Watched the thing go down, watched them throw all the gear off onto their sister ship, and that was pretty nuts. I was in the same trip. I was present when a fight broke out on the deck of a large scow. It just happened to be someone from our boat that got into a scuffle with somebody who was trying to cheat them money from the fish we caught. I've been caught in an overnight gully washer in a narrow canyon in Colorado. One of my early episodes with Roger Medley in Colorado. He was there when that happened. And we were totally surrounded by rising water everywhere. In that same trip, I started getting the beginning stages of hypothermia. I've been dehydrated. And again, I think that was another episode I did with Roger. And I was hospitalized after I went blind. I lost my vision for several days on a hunting trip. And the something called rhabdomyolysis. It's when you get so dehydrated that your body literally begins to eat itself. So I lost my vision. I've had an eye almost lost an eye. I guess I can say it that way. When I was younger, I had to have it stitched back together. I've used canoes. I've used pontoons and fishing boats in the dark to get to secluded hunting spots. I mean, that is some really fun, adventurous stuff. I've been caught in a storm in a 15-foot Zodiac 6 miles out at sea. And I've had a glacier collapse almost on top of myself and my friend Wade as we were filming it. That was in one of the earlier episodes. So you're hearing some of these stories for the first time. Some of them you've heard before. I've tracked wounded bears at night. That was just, I've had that a number of times using just my headlamp, you know, getting so close to them in the dark that you could hear them breathing in the dirt as they were laying there. And you knew that if you got any closer, and I've had them jump up, you know, and face me at that kind of a distance, that you needed to just kind of put it on your GPS and get out of there, come back the next morning. I had to kill a bear that tore my blind apart, and then he came back when I was trying to put it back together. I've had to pull my .44 mag on a grizzly that was just six, it was about, let me think, it was six, about 6 feet along the Russian River away from me. After he decided that he didn't like the way I looked, you know, I can remember being out in the stream filming him, and he was fine until a seagull went to like get a piece of one of the salmon he had torn apart. And he went after the seagull, and then he turned and came up over to me. So I just backed up and he just kept coming, and I kept talking to him, and he wasn't listening. So I had a buck in Ohio try to go, well, one in Pennsylvania too, when I was younger, had one try to gore me as I approached him. And the other buck I had jump up and try to kick me in the head as I reached down to touch it. I thought he was, you know, expired. And he wasn't. He jumped up and his hooves, man, he went right by my face. I've been swarmed and stung multiple times by bees after stepping in their hive while tracking a wounded bear. I've stood, and this is crazy, I've stood in the Canadian pitch black alone. This doesn't sound like that much of a big deal, but it was like 2 a.m. and I was out there for hours on a dirt road in wolf territory. And I had had that in my head the whole time before I got there. But when I had twisted an ankle really bad and my buddies had gone down over the hill, they had to help get a guy out who had been injured, and they had to take him out on a World War II gurney. And they were so far away, they were almost totally out of earshot. And I'm standing up there and you can hear, you know, all the coyotes and there's wolves in the distance, and you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. I mean, that was really crazy. You know, I've driven the Alcan Highway all the way back from Anchorage back to central Indiana. Broke down on the way, had to have parts flown into us. That was a pretty crazy adventure. Had to get out and push the car in a snowstorm. We were caught in, like, it was not blizzard conditions, but it was headed that way. I've been caught in a blizzard before. Remember the blizzard of 78? That was pretty nuts. I had a man threaten to kill me, actually twice. Yeah, not my fault, didn't do it. I've been sucked into the ocean from a riptide. I was sucked into a whirlpool. That was on an earlier episode as well, on a fishing trip with my son. Been with a buddy, and we were out in Cook Inlet in a Zodiac when a huge cargo ship almost ran us over while we were fishing in dense fog. I've been caught in a tidal bore, which was really crazy. It sounded like this, we were going to be swallowed up. I was stuck on a sandbar in that Zodiac off Deep Creek, Alaska, when we were trying to get to shore. We're about an eighth mile away from the shore, and we bottomed out. And, you know, we've got the riptides are coming in, and we've got 3-foot rollers just smashing us, filling up our boat, freezing cold water. And we had to literally pull that thing off the sandbar and go back into the storm to find a way out. Yeah. I got more here. Let me see this. It says I was writing all this down. I've kayaked with whales, which was really crazy. When you've got like a humpback whale that is, you know, as big as a school bus going underneath you, that's crazy. I've kayaked with Dall's porpoises. I've had them come alongside our boat on fishing trips and keep pace with us. And I've been parked fishing and had harbor seals, you know, keep popping up around my Zodiac. I've literally fed bald eagles near my feet as I cooked razor clams. We have been clamming off of an Inilchik Deep Creek along Cook Inlet. And these eagles all flew down, and I was feeding them, you know, morsels of these fish, these salmon and these halibut, while I'm looking across the inlet at several of Alaska's volcanoes. I think there's like Mount Redoubt. I'm trying to remember some. Mount Liliomna. There's several that you can see from right there. I've sat around campfires with some of Africa's greatest dangerous game hunting guides, and I've listened to them retell their adventures, you know, over a campfire with the sparks, you know, floating up into the air. Pretty amazing stuff. I've watched a foolish fisherman smack a black bear, and he chased its cubs with a fishing pole that were trying to get his fish. And then a grizzly shows up and ends up killing one of the cubs. That was really unnerving. I've snuggled in my sleeping bag along the Kenai River in Alaska when a woman right across the river from us was mauled by a grizzly on the opposite side and had to be flown out, you know, on a chopper. I've been in a small commercial jet when a reverse thruster somehow was deployed. This was going from Dulles to Harrisburg, where I was going to be speaking for a wild game dinner. And the reverse thruster went off in the right engine, which is almost mathematically impossible, according to the pilots afterwards. It almost tore the wing off the plane. We had to end up making an emergency landing. You know, the fuselage was filling up with smoke. I've been in a Super Cub, you know, one of your great bush planes, and had to make an emergency landing after being socked in. You know, and it was so heavy that it was like a white woolen blanket had been draped over the windshield, and you couldn't see the mountains on either side of the plane. I mean, we, you know, went from probably 2,000 feet to 1,000 to 500, and then we're getting lower and lower, and now all we can see is the tops of the trees. That was scary. You know, in my music career, I was blessed for almost 30 years to be able to do a lot of music, and started off touring with a guy named Stephen Curtis Chapman, which many of you know. I was able to tour with Sandy Patty and sing with her, a group called One. We opened up for her as well. Then I did some solo projects. I got to tour with Avalon and Crystal Lewis. I was able to perform for the Billy Graham Crusade, Promise Keepers, which is that massive, you know, men's movement that went on for many years, still around. I got to sing the national anthem for both, you know, the NBA and the NFL. I think there were some minor league games along the way as well. Got to sing at Radio City Music Hall. That was pretty cool, you know, in Fox Theaters. And I got to write my name. I remember at Radio City Music Hall, we all got to autograph backstage with tens of thousands of names of people who had performed there. And I wrote my name right by Yul Brynner. I mean, it was really cool. Some of these movie stars. You know, we performed in almost every basketball arena in the United States. I got to be a part of doing music with the Desert Storm 4th of July celebration with the Boston Pops at the Boston Harbor. You know, there's like 300,000 people in attendance. They brought us in a police escort, and we stood up out of the roof of this limo they brought us in, which is kind of crazy they did that, and thinking, remember this moment, Brent. You'll ever want to forget this. You know, I was blessed to be able to record a number of albums. I wrote songs on gold and platinum selling records. I've written a little more than a half a dozen books. I've been able to speak at well over 1,000 events. You know, I've been able to be a guest on television, radio, podcasts, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'm saying this because it really is all a part of my story. And as I begin to look at this, I'm like, holy cow, that's enough for like 10 lifetimes. And let me say this. I also survived raising teenagers, and there's still one left, and that might be one of the scariest things of all. But that's some of the good stuff, okay? And I'm not going to sit here and just, you know, pose and tell you all that stuff, because that's amazing stuff, and only God could have written that kind of a book. But there's been some really hard stuff, and there's stuff I'm not proud of, stuff I really don't like to share sometimes out loud. And the only times that I'm afraid to do it is when I start feeling insecure, or that I begin to believe that somehow the sin in my life identifies me, that I'm not good enough. But I hope that what you'll learn through this, and as I go through some of my hard stuff, that you'll find a freedom to be able to write down your hard stuff. Don't ignore it, okay? Don't ignore it. When you go to write your story down and you're writing down all this cool stuff, then write a section down where it's, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the really, really hard stuff. The kind of stuff, like I said, that you would want to go curl up in the closet because you're afraid maybe that no one would ever love you again. Because that is a part of your story. And that's a part of your story that only God could move into as a loving father and bring you out of there with his love. So, again, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know how to say it, there's been some really hard stuff that I'm not proud of. The kind of stuff that you hope you'll never go through. The kind of mistakes you hope that you're never going to make. And that will leave you curled up, as I was, you know, up in the corner full of fear and shame. You know, worried about whatever others were going to think about me. You know, the pain of almost losing everything. So as I began to write this down, I started thinking about, you know, my friends through the years. And as you get older, you begin to see some of your friends pass away way sooner than what you would think they would. I've lost several best friends to cancer, to heart attacks. Lost one year and a half ago to suicide. I've lost them to car accidents. You know, I've been wakened up at a hunting camp at 4 o'clock in the morning with a boy who just lost his father, just literally had just taken him out of the house where they lived, and he called me not knowing what to do. You know, I've been through the pain of divorce, you know, after a 28-year marriage, something I never thought or hoped that I would ever go through in my life. You know, I've experienced, you know, watching many of my close friends after that walk away. The ones that say, you know, we love you, we're just sorry that it happened, and then they're done. They just walk away, they disappear. I think sometimes they just don't know what to do. And then there are some people that hold judgment because they don't know the whole story, and it gets caught in their throat and they just can't get over it. You know, I've experienced what it's like to truly feel alone and abandoned. You know, years ago, experienced the pain of miscarriage in that marriage. You know, I've been betrayed by others, and I've betrayed the trust of others. You know, I've lied. That's hard because I hate lying, but I've been guilty of it. I've been humiliated. I've hit bottom more than once. And I came within a trigger pull of taking my own life almost 20 years ago. It's still hard to believe that I got to that point because I don't ever think that way. But my bottom in my life at that time, when everything that I had gone through hit so hard that I didn't see any other way out. And that's why I want you to look at your whole story, because you're going to see the faithfulness of God through the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, in the late 80s and 90s, I witnessed both of my parents going through cancer and then losing their hair. I watched them lose their strength. I watched them lose their joy. I remember my mother's tears as she came home from town after the wig that she had to wear because she had lost her hair had blown off her head while she was in town. And there she was on the city street chasing it, you know, down the street in total embarrassment. I remember the tears when she came home that day. She was so humiliated. I remember walking into the bathroom to see most of my dad's hair in the sink as the chemo, because he had gotten cancer after she did a few years later, you know, the chemo caused it all to fall out. I remember putting my arms around my dad from behind as he sat there crying. He was sitting in front of his computer and he was going through their finances. And he was showing me where everything was so that I'd know where he kept all the investments and savings. And, you know, what's sad is that wouldn't really matter much, as not too many years later, they would end up losing everything in order to pay medical bills. And I'll share about that in a second. You know, I was there when they life-flighted my father to Pittsburgh after suffering a massive heart attack, which they referred to as the Widowmaker. And that was days after when I hit bottom, the worst in my life. I'll never forget that. I remember kissing my dad on the lips for the first time since I was a little boy at the hospital where they were getting ready to chop him out. And he had been throwing up and everything, but I thought it was the final time I'd ever see my father. I saw my parents, as I was saying, lose almost everything. They were in a terrible car accident in January of 2013, and they had to end up selling everything. I mean, my dad was moved from rehab to rehab. He could never walk again. I watched that life get sucked out of my dad. His brain wasn't like it used to be. It was a serious head trauma that he had from the wreck. And I saw my mother's knees buckle. They had the place that they had owned, they had to sell to pay the medical bills, and we had to do like a big outdoor sale, and her things were being sold for pennies on the dollar. It broke my heart to have to get all her stuff together to help them. But when my niece showed up and she saw her things being taken away, like I said, for pennies on the dollar, her knees just buckled and they had to hold her up. You know, I watched my dad, like I said, no longer be able to use his legs, and I saw the pain in my mother's body increase. You know, and she was a little woman. She was 5 foot nothing, probably less than that when she passed away. And my niece, you know, gave me this phone call and she said, you know, Uncle Brent, you need to get here, you know, as quickly as you can. We don't think she's going to make it through the day. And I jump in my car in the worst fog I have ever seen in my life. And I drove for 400 miles. What normally would take me like 6 hours and 20 minutes took me 8.5 hours that day. And I got there, I think it was like 5:20 in the afternoon. And I was only about 20 minutes ahead of when she would finally lose consciousness. Wow. And, you know, she put her hand up and she kind of tipped her head up for me to kiss her on the lips. And like I said, within 20 minutes, she was totally unconscious. And I was there, you know, when both my parents passed away, Dad had a massive stroke at the very end. And I was there by his side for 5 or 6 days, helping to take care of him. He couldn't open an eye. He couldn't move a finger. There's nothing. It was really hard. You know, and the songs that I had written that my parents, you know, were so proud of and that I was, you know, proud of myself for writing them. You know, you always want to do something for your parents. They're really going to, you know, have an impact. And wow, you know, now I'm listening to those songs being played, you know, for their funerals instead of performing those songs in front of them at some concert that they'd traveled hours, you know, away from home just to come see their son because they were proud of him. But I was there, like I said, and I saw both of my parents pass away. But here's the thing. There's always that silver lining to something, and I was there to see both of my parents open their eyes and look up into the corner of the room and smile the most amazing smiles I've ever seen shortly before they passed. You know, neither one of them had been conscious for some time, but I saw it. And my faith and my hope in heaven increased, I mean, 1,000-fold. You know, so through it all, I discovered it was God who held me in his hand. You know, that whole thing, that he knows my name, and he holds me in his hand. He is the one who orchestrated this amazing journey for me. He's the one who carried me through the good, the bad, the ugly, and the incredibly difficult times. And I have discovered grace in ways I never would have known had I not hit bottom. I found healing for my wounds. I found healing for the wounds that I've given others. And I think sometimes that's the hardest part. You know, I've been able to forgive those around me who sinned against me. And like I said, I'm able to forgive those who I sinned against because I was harboring anger in my heart. You know, everybody has a story. And that was the beginning of forgiveness, was understanding that everyone has a story and that's why they act the way they act. And so you have to learn how to put yourself in their shoes. And you can really only do that many times when you've hit bottom yourself. So there is a gift in that challenge of hitting bottom. You know, I found incredible joy in watching my children grow up. You know, they make their own mistakes, but it's all a part of the journey. And to be able to not withdraw from them, but stay plugged in those difficult times, makes the journey that much richer. It's like that, how do I even say it? That crap in our life that God says, you know, I'm going to take that bad stuff and I'm going to make it into fertilizer and I'm going to grow something beautiful. And we get to see it happen. And we realize it was Him all along that did that. You know, I'm blessed to be married to a woman that I absolutely adore. I'm blessed to be able to have the opportunity to be a part of helping her raise her children. But I think maybe the greatest thing that I've ever experienced is to see God take all these adventures and all of these heartaches and all of these high points and low points in my life and create my story. It's through honestly sharing my stories and with humility sharing my faults when I go out and I speak to these men or through the podcast that I've seen over 20,000 men now come to Christ. I'd never seen 20 men come to Christ before my hitting bottom episode clear back in 2006. So God uses all of our story. He uses all of us, not just the things that we're proud of, to write our entire story. God is the author of our stories and the greatest writer that has ever, ever lived. So our stories were meant to be told, but before we can honestly and with humility do that, we have to know and give all the glory to the one who created us and sustains us. Listen, you were made for this time with your unique experiences to be used for His purposes, for His glory. He has created an amazing story for your life. So I want to ask you, are you ready to risk engaging in that story? Or are you so caught up in the shame for your failures that you're never able to see those ashes and what God has done to make them beautiful? Because if we never share the story of what God has done in our lives through all of this, the enemy gets the glory because he's kept us quiet. But when we no longer are held back by the opinions of others, when we know who we really are in Christ, we can now share our stories in the way they were meant to be and not tucked away in a box. You, my friend, were not meant to be silent. You were created to be unleashed. Tell your stories. We'll see you next time.